The next case is John A. Wade et al. Versus Progressive Insurance.
Constitutional, does it? I mean, they pass legislation all the time for specific political invested interests, don't they?
Of course, they do. Justice Douglas, that is not the point, though. But by collapsing the claims, they are eliminating rights which the Constitution prohibits. The Constitution sets the floor beneath which nobody can go. The Constitution says that you cannot, by law, limit the right of recovery in a long decade.
This isn't limiting. The argument, of course, you know, the opposite argument is that this statute doesn't limit by law the recovery. You say, practically speaking, it does because, you know, clients will not be able to recover an additional amount through insurance. But do you really, I mean, I know this is your argument, but that the Constitution prescribes a certain level of insurance rights, the contractual rights that folks pay for and buy, and that the Constitution says those rights, we're going to talk about those rights. That's a limitation by law.
Right, the Constitution talks about rights, does not talk about contracts, does not.
And isn't that what the difference here? Like, I think that it seems to me the constitutional provision would disdain a law passed by the General Assembly not related to any insurance bargains that citizens make, but a law that would say, be it enacted that henceforth no one in this state should recover from anybody else, should get any judgment from another citizen for more than $100 or $100,000. Isn't that the sort of enactment that the Constitution prohibits, rather than an enactment like this that really suggests that it doesn't have anything to do with what people can recover on their own? This is just relating to what contractual rights people can engage in. I mean, you want to argue about their contractual rights equal some constitutional level of interest by the General Assembly.
Well, indeed, basically my argument is not that laws can't be passed which affect contract rights. That's not the position which I take, and I don't think that's the position the Security takes. Our point is that you cannot eliminate an individual right, which you are doing in this case.
That's where I guess you lose me. Individual rights. I only have certain... insurance companies owe me a certain obligation based on what I bargain with them for. How much I pay tells me how much they will pay in the event that I need coverage.
Well,
is that my right?
Well, with all due respect, there is no bargain here. Not the waste. My mother, my drivers must have insurance, and they have to take what they have to give to
them. There are lots of companies, though, Council.
Right.
There's lots of companies offering insurance, and that, I mean, we, and you, so don't buy any, you know, or buy a lot more.
Well, one of the problems, of course, is the average person out there does not know what they are buying.
Those are whole other arguments, though. You really need to stick to the constitutionality, right?
Yes. All right. I'm sorry. I apologize. I lost your question.
And I'm monopolizing your time, but I think you've answered it.
Council, let's take your argument to a different level. I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. If a person sues a defendant, any clear clause of the act is clearly involved. A person sues a defendant. They get $1 million judgment, liability judgment. If the defendant
only had $100,000 insurance coverage, your argument seems to say that that is unlawful, that there are restrictions on the right to recover. Is that what you're saying? No, our argument is not that the insurance, and Security does not argue this either. Not that the companies cannot set a limit of damage to clearly that they can.
So insurance companies can clearly set a limit to what they'll sell, correct?
Certainly.
And under uninsured coverage, can insurance companies clearly set a limit to what they're willing to sell?
They can set a limit on what they're willing to sell, and what they can't do is eliminate the individual rights.
Now that's where I keep getting lost. If you have a contract for insurance coverage and you say, all right, I buy 100, 300, so I want 100, 300 in other insurance coverage or uninsured coverage as well, I bargain for a contract for right, correct? I have paid premiums to buy the right coverage. Correct.
Yes, correct.
And if I'm worried about that amount, I can buy $1 million coverage, correct?
Sure.
Now, if I have an accident and I go to arbitration because the other guy's uninsured, the arbitrator's going to award me $5 million, can they not?
Not in arbitration, no, they can't exceed the.
Oh, yes, they can. They can exceed. You can't cover more than what your coverage is, but they can give you more than what your coverage is, can they not?
I don't believe so, no. If it's under
that. I reject a lot of arbitration cases and out of practice, we got awards.
Coverage all the time. You don't tell me that the three arbitrators
sit there and say, this plan is worth $5 million, but they only got $25,000 coverage, so that's only $5,000.
Well, actually, I do think that under the arbitrators are bound by the terms of the policy. policy provides a maximum coverage.
She's always bad.
Okay, well, I'll see what they put in that, say that, that's not the way I track the law, and I just expect it to work, but let's say, okay, you get the amount of awards, you're saying then that arbitrators only give you the amount of awards and coverage you bought? That's why you created this right that's being abrogated somehow? I don't get where you're coming up with a right. You buy insurance, you get the amount you bought, bargained for, where is your right? What constitutional right do you have to something else?
Well, the constitutional right is, and the mandate is not limited damages by law.
By what law?
In this case.
You limit contracts by damages by contract. You limit not being covered by contract.
Limit damages by law in contract or law. I think that's the Constitution that doesn't mention contract.
If I could interject here, what we're talking about is 3937-18H, which addresses the per person limit. And it doesn't talk anything about the maximum limits. And I'd like to hear you address that, even right into that, what you're talking about and limiting recovery by law, at least limiting damages by law.
In this case, when you look at the Wake case, you have a child that was killed as a result of the negligence of the crime. He survived by two loving parents and three siblings. There's no question that the siblings have very substantial lost their siblings. But in this case, by compacting all the claims in a single claim, you have effectively eliminated the claims of children. The loss of the parents is so overwhelming that the children will receive nothing.
You have a designated claim. They can still go after the court teacher for whatever assets the court teacher has individually. They still have that just because you can't collect the judgment doesn't make it unconstitutional.
So we have a right to a meaningful remedy, and in this case, with the Wake policy, the progressive policy, the policy states that they are any payment made to an insured person shall be reduced by any amount payable to that insured person.
There's a little difference. I see that a lot, the argument that right to a meaningful remedy, I guess you would agree, Mr. Murray, is not a right to a meaningful recovery. Do we, by our Constitution, guarantee a right to meaningful recovery? And if we do, well, there's a lot of folks who have a good claim out there, people who even had defense verdicts. I mean, they didn't have a meaningful remedy, did they? Isn't the right to remedy a due process promise by our Constitution?
Meaningful remedy.
Does that mean dollars? Or does it mean process?
Well, I think that it does that mean process. However, again, going back to the original point, you cannot by law limit the amount of
right. In the, okay.
And I think you are doing
that. By saying that, I know that. You say that. By law, it doesn't limit it. I guess the contract limits it, but the law doesn't say that you may not. That you can't recover is just a threat and says against a tortfeasor. Now, that may, practically speaking, not result in a recovery, but that's, I guess, the question. Does the Constitution require a meaningful recovery of money?
No, but with all due respect, by classing claims to a single claim, this law.
By allowing contracts to now be treated as meaningful, that's what you mean by collapsing claims, by saying the contract says only one you know, per person, per occurrence, but we're talking about per person, that meaning is just what they meant, per person. Collapsing claims, but it's one injured person.
For each.
A lot of people would like to recover because of that loss, I understand. You know, depending on the size of the family, people who are harmed by it, hurt by it. But if the, but all the, if you only bought insurance per person for $100,000, is that a constitutional violation?
I believe it is. Okay. I believe it is a constitutional violation because, again, it really eliminates claims. Eliminates, you know, I look to the definition, definition of limit, restrict.
It doesn't limit the claim. It eliminates the amounts available for the folks who are hurt because of the limit. They still have a claim, don't they? They have a claim.
Well,
they might not get to recover.
Say all these people are one people. It's, you know, yes. But to me, it's a contradiction to say that these people, by statute, who have individual claims, if you put them together, that means that they still have their claim. I don't think it does. I mean, I just keep going back to the definition of limit. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the purpose of the statute was, to limit the claims. I think my definition is unconstitutional.
But isn't that where it moves you? You know, this argument has been going on now for the full 15 minutes about a constitutional right. The real problem is the set-off. If you had a very clear case and didn't have Senate Bill 20, you wouldn't be arguing constitutional right. You just want, you don't want the set-off here. And you don't want all the claims collapsed into one. All right? Okay. So apparently nobody's going to get a chance now to argue the set-off issue. And doesn't the 39-37-18 say the amount available for payment?
It does say that.
And was the amount available for payment enough under the single limit to compensate all these people adequately?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Now, can you contract to do that?
No.
Well, in our point, my point is that you can never contract to do something which violates, you know, basic constitution.
All right. We've been there. I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you,
Mr. Henneman. Can't get that out of his mind, can he?
At the police court, my name is Henry Henneman, and I represent the Progressive Insurance Company. I believe we have requested to allocate 3 minutes towards the pool list of the Ohio Department of Insurance Institute. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time.
About your time.
I would like to start by stating that, you know, there's a lot of arguments set forth in the whole of the brief that it was filed. There's a lot of rhetoric taking place. There's a lot of poetic license that's taken by both sides. But the fact of the matter is that 39-37.18 is not a law that limits damages recoverable in civil action for in the courts for wrongful death. Uninsured, but the statute that's before this court is a statute that's part of the creature of the legislature and their scheme of things as to what they want for uninsured, underinsured workers covered in the state of Ohio. The damages anybody recovers under an uninsured workers coverage claim is a contractual judgment. It is for a policy that is purchased, that the insured purchased. That he has a right to purchase. He has a right to even reject the coverage in total. If he wants the coverage, he has a right to recover to the type. He has a right to recover the purchase the limits of his coverage. He can have an umbrella policy for $2-4 million. He can have a policy with split limits of 100 over 300, or he can purchase a single limit policy, whatever he wants to purchase.
Well, and is your argument also that there are some tortfeasors who are able to pay large amounts? Bill Gates, for example, as he gets used for anything else, someone with that kind of resources, the Constitution doesn't limit the amount of money that a plaintiff could recover from someone like him, does it?
Absolutely.
Isn't that the point? That it's the liability of the tortfeasor.
That's exactly right.
That we look to in the constitutional sense.
And the tortfeasor in a wrongful death action is not the insurance company. The insurance company didn't cause the accident.
So then parties, most of us, since we don't have the resources, someone like that does, we buy insurance to protect ourselves from our own liability and from the liability of others who have not protected themselves.
That's correct.
And that's a contract issue. That's isn't that the argument here, that the Constitution doesn't place any limit on what you and I may contract for, and it doesn't place any limit on
the recovery.
If you happen to hit, or if you happen to be a rich person, you can get all the money you want from them. Sure, it gets
you. I would like to also point out that the Ohio Financial Responsibility Act, which is a creature of the statute by the legislature for imposing insurance on or financial responsibility requirements on people in Ohio, and it speaks to this, and in this statute, 450951, the requirements for the owner's liability insurance, it says that every owner's policy of liability insurance shall insure, and the insurance without reading all of it gets down to the point that shall include $12,500 because of bodily injury to or death of one person, which is parallel to, which tracks 3937.18H, limiting the recovery for the death of one person to the single person living. I would like to also mention that if it's a law that affects the right to recover wrongful death damages from a tortfeasor, the 3937.18H has no bearing, has no impact on the tortfeasor because he's not a party to this insurance contract. Just a thought that hit me in the sense that it's going to be a law that's prohibited by the Constitution, that should be something that should impact the tortfeasor in some manner, shape, or form.
Mr. Hedman, do you know, could somebody purchase a policy from Progressive or, you know, from another company that does not have this provision, that's the offensive provision in this policy?
That does not have the single person limit. If you purchase a policy with, for instance, under the PLOP policy, the personal umbrella liability policy, or if you purchase a single limit policy, you won't have that because you don't have split limits to worry about. And that is available in the marketplace. People can buy that. You can buy a split limit policy, you can buy a single limit policy, you can buy an umbrella policy, and there are umbrella policies of the board.
So a person could purchase a policy, so that I make sure I understand your answer. A person could purchase a policy that would give the coverage that Mr. Murray is arguing for his clients here.
That's right.
But the umbrella policy would still have the umbrella policy would still have the single claim individual language in it.
It would have
it would.
Well,
and it does.
What I'm familiar with is in the underlying policy that supports the PLUF policy. You have to have it on your automobile, then you can get the umbrella policy.
Sure.
But the umbrella policy is a single limit policy.
A single limit policy.
$1 million for it.
But limited to a single person.
No. All claims. If you take the case of Mr. Murray, the Wade case, and they had an umbrella policy, and they had $2 million in umbrella coverage, whatever damages those people suffered, they would be able to recover.
So here, if you had an umbrella policy, you could have limited the $25,000 because of the set off in the underlying policy, but would have agreed that the $1 million was available in the umbrella.
That's correct.
I've shown you my policy, haven't I? Remember?
I remember.
Yeah. Specifically said otherwise, he knows what I'm talking about.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Court. My name is John Kulowitz. I'm here on behalf of the Ohio Insurance Institute because there is no basis in Ohio constitutional history for the argument that Section 19A somehow precludes the legislature from regulating the insurance contract or makes insurance policies invalid. On the contrary, every bit of evidence we have supports delegates intended only to repeal the $12,000 limit that Section 10772 imposed on that contract for a prevention of time, and that they took special care to avoid any interference with contractual or insurance type systems. Proposal 240, in Section 19A, was introduced as a measure specifically tailored to, quote, the right of action now existing for injury involving death, unquote. It was the need for explained by the sponsor, Youngstown Trial Lawyer David Anderson, in terms of the effect $12,000 statutory limit would have on families and dependents of Victor Donahue, a fellow delegate, in the event that the nomination died due to a wrongful act of presence of someone else. The proposal was amended to account for the concern that several delegates expressed that somehow Section 19A would interfere with the operation of contracts became operative in the event of death. The main of the contract on which they focused was that involved the workers' compensation system, which involves, among other things, the payment of money and recovery that is limited by law in the event of death. One after another delegate arose to express concern that if we adopt Section 19A, we're going to be cutting into this compulsory workers' compensation system that we're trying so urgently to create. But every time that a delegate got up to express that concern, Mr. Anderson and the other advocates of Section 19A rushed to their feet to assure them that there was no intent to interfere with the workers' compensation system or any other type of operative contract, and that on the contrary, they intended to keep those sorts of things completely out of this. Section 19A, Proposal 240, was limited just to this wrongful death statute. While that debate, what Mr. Anderson and the advocates of Proposal 240 did was to adopt the proposal of Judge King from Erie County to incorporate into the Section 19A the very language of the statute that was issued. They grafted into the proposal the clause that it related only to causes of action for injury resulting from the wrongful act, neglect, or default of another. Finally, the committee passed Proposal 240 and recommended to the voters on the basis that under the Constitution at the time, the legislature could, in fact, impose limits on the wrongful death claims and had done so. And if this proposal, the voters adopted it, would abolish the power of the legislature to do that. What the appellant advocate is a type of law that not only has bad economics in terms of supporting insurance coverage, but that also has no basis whatsoever in Ohio constitutional history. Of the debate that took place across the street 87 years ago, and this week made clear for the agreement on behalf of the Ohio insurance from the
Thank you, Mr. Kulowitz. Mr. Rosenberg, Mr. Merge, use your time as much. Take a minute.
Two things that I think would help clear this debate up. The Ohio Constitution, when it says damages and when it says remedy, never says for remedy, never says contract remedy. It just uses the generalized term. The problem we've got here is, yes, I will grant there is no limit as to whatever tort remedy is available against the tort feature, assuming that that is a legitimate remedy. The problem with the concept of remedy is that there is a procedural aspect to it as well as a substantive aspect to it. Substantive due process as well as procedural due process. That's on the federal level. When we get to Sorrell versus Devenir in Ohio, we talk about how much is available in terms of actual compensation to the plaintiff. When we take a look at the big scheme picture here, yes, there is a $1 million award that you can get and it's an uncollectible tort fee. That is not an adequate remedy because there is no substance being given here, number one. It is also a limit upon the contract damages that can be granted. The other issue that has come up that seems to be confused is that we are solely here about a split limits policy. There is no debate whatsoever about $1 million umbrellas and $5 million single limits policies and what have you. The problem is when you get a 50-100 policy or a 100-300 policy, that is a unique aspect of this case. When somebody buys a 100-300 policy, they are assuming, or at least they did reasonable to assume, that you've got $300,000 in coverage. The problem of this statute is it says, well, if you've got a death claim, you really only have $100,000 in coverage. So the problem we're focusing on here is unique to the split limits policy, where you collapse the claim, what should have been $300,000, into $100,000. therefore, it doesn't matter because people don't understand that you can't go out there and buy a $1 million, $3 million worth of this house. You would still have the same problem. You would still have the consortium claimants and the debt claimants effectively recovering zero. And that's the problem that we seem to be having here, and that's the problem that we seem to not be addressing.
You need to sum up.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, I think if we keep this concept separate, if we say that contract remedies and contract damages for what are being addressed here, that's what we don't focus on, regardless of what are being done, court remedies and court damages. And that's the aspect that I think that is seems to be missed by the legal decisions and some of the other decisions that are out there.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised for our opinion. Thank you for your time.